Good evening and welcome to the April 10th, 2012 Morro Bay City Council meeting. Welcome to everybody who came out tonight and is here with us, and welcome those of you who are watching at home. Let the record reflect that all members of the City Council are present, and we'll begin, please, with a moment of silence. Announcements. Why don't we start with you tonight, Noah?
All right. Thank you. Just want to start by announcing that our business forum, the community and business forum meeting that happens the second and fourth Thursdays of the month at the Embarcadero Grill across from the giant chessboard. This week's meeting starts at 9 a.m., and it's going to be the follow-up to the Chamber of Commerce's presentation of their proposed economic development program that they're working on, and we'll be eventually presenting it to the City Council. It should be an interesting presentation, and I encourage anyone who is interested in economic development in Morro Bay showing up to be able to provide their input to the Chamber of Commerce. So that'll be this Thursday, April 12th at 9 a.m., and then the following business forum on the 26th will be the first candidates forum for the upcoming primary election here for the city council and mayor's race. So that'll be the 26th. So two business and community forums of very significant topics. We have our JPA meeting for the wastewater treatment plant with Cayucas, 6 p.m. also on April 12th in Cayucas at the Veterans Hall, and it'll be a presentation on the recycled water analysis and a little bit of dialogue there about the lobbyist position, and a presentation on the biosolids program, which will be also interesting to discuss. And then everyone else pitches in what they can. And just a really nice opportunity for people that are looking to identify additional resources for our veterans, or just to get together with veterans and talk about their lives and connect to each other, find ways to help each other out. So again, the Veterans Support Group, it's a monthly meeting. Deanna Kennedy's phone number, if you're interested, is 440-9263.
Just pray for Salmon to show up.
Yeah.
And police is representative by our longest-serving officer, Manny Silva, and I wanted to introduce him. If you don't know Manny, Manny's the good guy. And thank you for being here tonight, Manny. Nancy?
It won't go on. You want me to be quiet?
Whoops, thank you for sharing. Just two real quick announcements. The AAUW Garden Tour is April 29th. Be sure you get your tickets. They're still only $10. And I see a hat in back, so I think you'll hear more about this later. But they are available still at Coalesce Miners or from me. Also, with this nice rainy weather, it's time to plant your dahlias. Remember, the dahlia is the city flower, and this year we will be celebrating here at Vets Hall on August 24th and 25th. Thank you.
And AGP, we're going to need a technical. Nancy's microphone's not working. Carla?
Something. Good evening. Thank you. A few things. This Thursday also is the Eco Rotary meeting. Talk about that. Okay, so you'll get that information. The 21st of April is going to be the second annual now emergency vehicle show in Morro Bay. There'll be lots of antique fire engines and police vehicles and other assorted military type vehicles and things. The 29th, which is Nancy said is the garden tour, is also the Quota Club fashion show at the Inn at Morro Bay. And the 28th is the Kite Festival and the Morro Bay Parade. So lots of events coming up.
Thanks. I see a lot of our fishermen here tonight. Tom and Diane, the Blues, Jeremiah, Brian, Joe. We want to welcome you especially for coming out tonight. Closed session report, Rob.
Good evening. Prior to tonight's regular session, Council met in closed session on a number of different items. They met with the labor negotiator to discuss labor negotiations with the various labor negotiation groups. They also discussed real property transactions, the Flying Dutchman lease and the C-1 solution lease. They also discussed initiation of litigation regarding the City of Morro Bay and Sharon Moore, and they also discussed pending litigation regarding Mesert Line versus City of Morro Bay. As to all these items, no action was taken that requires reporting under the Brown Act.
Thank you, Rob, and an amazingly fine job. Okay, we're at the public comment period. If any of you would like to address council, this is the appropriate time. Please state your name for the record. Please limit your comments to 3 minutes. When the buzzer goes off, your time has expired. Good evening and welcome.
Thank you. My name is Sharon Meyer. I make you wish they were yours. This is our big fundraiser, and the money goes to local things, especially young people. We are sending this year three seventh grade girls to Tech Trek, which is a math and science camp at the University of California, Santa Barbara. So the majority of money goes for sending these girls there, but we also have a high school scholarship. We give cash awards to essay contest winners at Morro Bay High School, and we give books to the public library. So we want and need your support. It's only $10, a really great value. And again, it will be on Sunday, April 29th, noon to 5 o'clock, and I hope they'll all be able to come. Thank you.
Thank you, Sharon. Thanks for coming down. Hi.
Good evening. My name is Carol Vogt. I'm also with AAUW, and we have another matter that is before the council tonight, which is Equal Pay for Women Day. And just to give you a little background, when I first graduated from college, I hired on with AT&T in a job where I was paid $600 a month, and I have to tell you I was thrilled, until I found out the men, and by the way, they were all white men, got $1,000 a month. And I was told, but when they take me to dinner, they have to pay. And I sort of figured, for $1,000 a month, I'll take them to dinner. But that didn't work out. Anyway, that was many years ago, and there's been lots of improvement. But what we want to do is set the goal, and this is the equal pay for women for the same work. And it's sponsored by AAUW and quite a few other national organizations. Thank you.
Thank you so much for coming tonight, Carol. Hiya, Hank.
Good evening, Mayor and Council and friends at home and staff. I'm Hank Roth. Just wanted to talk a little bit about the April 22nd will be the Blessing of the Fleet, North T Pier at 12:30. Come on out and show your support for our local fishing industry. And a thank you to Father Ed and Pastor Roger for coordinating this. And I want to remind you about the Morro Bay Kite Festival is just around the corner, April 28th and 29th, marks the sixth annual festival. We'll kick off the Morro Bay Parade. We'll officially kick off the Kite Festival at 10 a.m. on Morro Bay Boulevard at Shasta Avenue in Old Town Morro Bay. So come on out and join your friends and neighbors and visitors lining the parade route. Come watch local business and civic organizations along with equine horse teams and strut their stuff. The Grizzly Academy Color Garden Drill Team will be there along with our public servants and citizens as they share a good old-fashioned small-town parade. Then the Kite Festival will begin at 11:30 at the Morro Rock with the Blessing of the Wind by the Salinan Tribe, followed by hundreds of kites being flown by kids and adults. Food and craft, vendors, fun kites, games, and other activities are all on the agenda for this exciting two-day event, highlighted by professional kite wranglers who will demonstrate the local folks, especially food vendors. It's nice to have different kinds of food out there. So thank you very much, and have a good evening.
Thank you, Hank. Who would like to go next? Hi, Joe.
Joe Yukich, and I'm a candidate for mayor here in Morro Bay. I'm also a taxpayer advocate. Good to see you, Manny. You remind me of that great Frank Sinatra song, "I Won't Dance, Don't Ask Me." You've gone viral, you guys. That's nice. You know, I want to talk to you a minute about something that's kind of bothering me, and it's kind of along the lines of this moment of silence. And I'm sure you've addressed this many times before, but what really is, I think we're at the point where, you know, when we're afraid to mention God in the public forum, that's a problem. And the hypocrisy lies in the two documents that lay behind you. And it's the Constitution of the United States and the Declaration of Independence. In the beginning of the Constitution of the United States, it states, "We the people." In the Declaration of Independence, it says, "Endowed by our Creator with inalienable rights," which translates into, now, Creator, I don't know what that means to you people because it's a moment of silence, but to me, that means God. And I think what our founding fathers meant, they meant to say that power comes from God to us, the people, and then we loan it to government. There is no other form of government like that. And at the time of the founding fathers, most countries were monarchies or dictators, so it was a rare form of government. So I really think we need once in a letter in 1803 from Thomas Jefferson to the Danbury Baptists. The Danbury Baptists were afraid of a theocracy in this country developing like the Church of England. And Thomas Jefferson wrote this letter to assure them that there would be a wall of separation between church and state. So I'd like you to think long and hard about prayer and what it means and how we need it at this time in this country. And I just don't think a moment of silence works here. And I think there's enough precedent in the courts that would defend that. And I think we need to look at that. Thank you.
Thank you, Joe. Who would like to go next? Hi.
Hi. Following Joe. Wow. I'm Hal Abrams, resident of Morro Bay and the commissioner, the chairman of the board for Morro Bay Community Radio, which is a small organization, a board of about 18 people thus far, to establish a low-power FM station here in the community. And how is it going so far? Pretty good. A lot of great support. At this point right now, I'm looking for support from all of you for putting an antenna in the city yard, which is something that we need to do before we continue with the application, the FCC application. And this is a small 4x3 antenna. It's can be potentially placed on a current existing antenna that's right there or tower that's right there. The public service director has confirmed that the tower can accommodate this additional antenna. For those of you that don't know about my project, Morro Bay Community Radio will feature a minimum of 8 hours of daily local originated programming. It will cover local issues, the street festivals, the markets, the council meeting. Engineer, well-versed and experienced in the process related to putting up these kind of low-power FM stations. Calvel, Burtz & Associates, alongside Ernest Sanchez, communications attorney, they will be key in assembling the necessary materials to demonstrate the community's eligibility for a license. Our window for this application is small and brief, usually about 6 months, and we're looking for that window to open up within the next year or so. The identification of the transmitter site and the antenna is a key component for the FCC application. There's no risk in locating the antenna in the existing tower, and with the approval of the FCC, and the antenna can be relocated any time should the city yard change in formation. I trust that Morro Bay Community Radio will have everybody's support. Thank you.
Thank you, Hal.
Who would like to go next? Don't be shy. Here we go.
Hi, I'm Chanel Channing, Morro Bay. And I want to extend the announcement that Noah's making about the veterans and what the support group that's been going on that was formed by Deanna Kennedy. And this month, what we're going to do is we're going to have veterans, we're going to have a veteran panel that will speak about the history of Morro Bay. And we really want to encourage the community to come out and join us, not only in listening to what has been unearthed as far as the history of Morro Bay's history in terms of military history. The U.S. Army was stationed here, the U.S. Navy, and they prepared for World War II at the Morro Bay 4th of July. So please come out and enjoy that. And I also want to thank Hal Abrams, who just spoke about his radio station that's going to be here. That's going to be a nonprofit. There's going to be no commercials. And it will actually give us some radio at nighttime, when a lot of time our radio gets very squirrely. So thank you very much.
Thanks, Chanel. Jeremiah?
Mr. Mayor, ladies and gentlemen of the City Council and City staff, a lot of the fishermen came here today, including myself, and we're going to make a big talk on an upcoming issue of the Monterey Bay National Marine Sanctuary. And now I find out we didn't have to. We don't have to make this big talk, so you can imagine how disappointed I am. But in any case, we did have a visual here, and I just wanted we only have 4 or 5 pieces. Would it be possible to do I give these? And there's one on the screen up here that is the same as we'll be passing out to you. There's going to be more of these available. Tom Roth, by the way, was responsible for getting these for us. He and Lisa Wise Consulting, who we work with in San Luis, worked up until this afternoon. So these are in stripe that goes north to south. The whole length is closed to all ground fish for all fisheries. That's just closed. The only thing we can fish there are eels, slime eels, and you control salmon over that area. But it's all of the ground fish are completely closed to any type of fishing. There is a line in there, a dotted line that goes up through that green line that is designates a closed area for gillnet fishing. And what that line did was effectively end all the gillnet, that set gillnet. So that ended all the set gillnet fishing in the area. Although the line looks, it's okay, it's a line, so you can fish outside. Well, there is no fishing outside of that line, so when they put the line in, they knew that, so they pretty much ended the fishery. So that does not exist in this town anymore. All of the dark, the brown areas along the beach are marine protected areas, and they're all closed now to any type of fishing for commercial or, in many cases, sport. Then it goes on and on. So I just wanted to bring that to your attention. We're going to have a few more of these little charts made, and hopefully people will get to see them. Because some of the questions, a lot of people have the mindset that we need marine protected areas. When they say, well, we need more. And the first question I always ask them is, well, how many do you have now? And then they, well, I don't know. Well, how would you possibly know that we need more if you don't know what we got? So this hopefully will give somebody a visual on what we do have now.
Thank you.
So anyways, Tom Roth.
Many of you know we have a coalition with Sierra Club called Marine Sanctuary Alliance. Our chapter is involved because of the clean water aspects that a sanctuary could bring. Sanctuaries measure not only ocean water quality, but also the fresh water that meets with the ocean and affects habitat. We think that we share a lot of the concerns with local fishermen and fishing heritage on the Central Coast, having to do with sustainable fishing and also clean water. So while there might be a perceived wedge between fishing and the Marine Sanctuary Alliance, or the push towards a marine sanctuary for San Luis Obispo coast waters, I don't think there's anything that's further from the truth. The sanctuary provides a stakeholder representation so that all the different aspects of businesses and through a stakeholder policy can be met, and all the voices get heard through the sanctuary process. The Marine Bay, or the Monterey Bay Sanctuary, has thrived in Monterey Bay and is now opening a visitor center in Santa Cruz to extend the educational opportunities that the sanctuary provides. We feel that tourism and also local kids and adults can benefit from the educational opportunities that the sanctuary provides. And Morro Bay is a magical place. I mean, you can't drive around town. You can't look at it. People want to come here. And I think it's important that the city have a vision for something that people can do in the future. These education.
Lori. Hi, Lori.
Do I have to state my name?
Yes, please.
Okay. Hi, I'm Lori French. And tonight I'm a commercial fisherman's wife and sister-in-law, who are stuck in Moss Landing, the land of the Monterey National. Help me out here.
Sanctuary.
Okay, yeah, I was trying to think of that in a nice way, but I couldn't think of a nice way to say it. The expansion of the sanctuary is just a bad, bad, bad idea. It's bad for economics for all of us. And if the seismic study goes through that they're planning on doing, it's a moot point anyway, because they're going to blow all the fish out of the water. So, okay, that's all I have to say.
Thank you, Lori. Hi, Brian. Welcome.
Good evening, Mayor and Council. Lori queued it up for me there, so I thought I should come right to the mic. First of all, I think Jeremiah was going to point out the rockfish conservation areas, the marine protected areas in conjunction with the PG&E security zone, some of the additional closed areas that we already have. There's a lot of protection already out there. So personally, if we were forced to have a sanctuary, I would go back to 10 years ago and say we should go for our very own sanctuary if we absolutely had to have one. But I don't think any fishermen really want a sanctuary. I've been out there fishing the last few days. Everything seems fine out there. Sound waves from the big boat when it comes through and blows all the fish out of the water like Lori was talking about. And Coastal Commission is scheduled to approve that tomorrow. I don't know. It seemed like it was kind of secret and it was slid through and it just kind of cropped up recently that we were even aware of it, but there's no direct mitigation attached to that, so they're just going to come in and tell us we can't fish while they put that cable in. And I recently learned that we had somebody willing to take the old Verge's lease site to buy hagfish, which is of interest to me because that's what I'm doing currently, and they backed out because of the uncertainty connected to our waterfront due to the upcoming seismic that they had a concern that they might not be able to buy any fish at the end of this year. And so it's already affecting us right now, and everybody should be aware of that. Oh, and I forgot to say when I came up, Manny would look good in that seat full time. Known him for a long, long time. He's a good man. And additionally on the PG&E, Daryl brought it up at the Harbor Board meeting, the entrainment and impingement and stuff that goes on with all the larval impacts over there. And it just occurred to me that whatever happened, why did the city not get our cut of that warm water settlement? It seems like the county sucked up all that money and the real impacts are here on our waterfront in Port St. Louis and their waterfront. And so I never quite understood why that money disappeared and it wasn't distributed directly to the people impacted by the taking of that water and the changing of that ocean and the stuff that they had to settle on. So maybe somebody could look into where our cut of that money ended up, because I'm sure we could use it. And last, I just think...
Hi, welcome.
Hi, I'm Brett Cunningham, one of your Harbor Advisory Board representatives and a local commercial fisherman and business owner. And I wasn't going to say anything, but since someone opened the stakeholder door up, we've been down that road so many different times as fishermen. I'm pretty sure our track record is pretty much 0-10 on that. We've never gotten a fair shake on a stakeholder board that I'm aware of. So if that holds any bearing or any weight in this issue, it's not a good outcome for fishermen. Thank you.
Thank you, Brett. Who would like to go next? Anybody? Tom, are you going to say anything? There we go.
I'm sorry. I wasn't.
I'm sorry, Nancy. Nancy will be next. Hi, Tom.
Hello. My name's Tom Roth.
I was born on a farm or raised on a farm here in SLO County, and I've been home ported here for 25 years, and I fished commercially for 40. And the one thing I learned about the sanctuary issue is that the original document written in 1992 had certain protections for agriculture and for fishing. Over the years, the sanctuary staff has usurped that document. They've lobbied for their own goals. They've created science. But what I really learned is this. The supervisor of the sanctuary runs the sanctuary. The Sanctuary Advisory Committee is appointed now by the supervisor. If we fall into that situation, we would lose our identity.
Thank you, Tom. Anybody else? I'm sorry, Nancy, please. I invited Nancy next. Nice hat.
Well, I'm coming up here to do a little comic relief after all that reality. I'd like to invite all of you to Fundraiser Follies this year, which is going to be country music. And my name still is Nancy Castle. And it's going to be a very fun show. We have a lot of great voices. We've been rehearsing for a week, so there's going to be a lot of spontaneity to it. And the first show is a matinee at 2 p.m. for all of the folks that don't want to drive at night. And then we're going to hoe down in the evening at 7 p.m. And we're going to have finger food and wine and beer for anybody who would like it. And we're going to be teaching line dancing for all of you who have been waiting for the opportunity to learn. So come on down and join us, please, right here at the Veterans Memorial Hall.
Thank you, Nancy. Well done. Anybody else? I see a few faces out there, friends of mine, that are the biggest talkers I know, and none of you are standing up, but that's fine. Is there anybody else? Going once, going twice, back to council. Thank you very much. Thank you, Sharon and Carol. They have left. Appreciate them coming down. Hank, Joe, always a pleasure having you here. Hal, Chanel, Jeremiah, Brad, thanks for coming down. Lori, Brian, Brett, Tom, and Nancy. Joe, moment of silence. You know, that's the way I've always done it. It's kind of, I support you in doing it however you want to do it. Hal, I think everybody is behind the radio station. Good luck with it. I don't think I can't speak for council till we vote on it, but my sense is there's not going to be a lot of resistance, and we wish you luck. Brian, we have received it's all the fishermen really, we've received the answer to the EIR from you guys, and I've passed it on to the city manager, and they are picking through the EIR now, and at the next meeting we will have our response to it, which will make it, we thought, in time, the deadline is May 12th?
Third.
In time for that, but now one of you said that the Coastal Commission is kind of steamrolling, so... The next meeting, we will have our response, and I can't predict how it will be, but we have received yours, and I've read it and absorbed it, and it's an excellent job, and Andrea has it, and she will pass that on to the appropriate people, and that will be taken into account. Anything else anybody wants to respond to?
I would just add that I've also received some copies of comments that have been sent by some of the local environmental organizations that there was a question on whether or not they were weighing in on this for the EIR for PG&E, and the answer is yes, they are. And I have also forwarded those to the city attorney to include in their comments for ours.
Great. Thank you again. We are at the consent calendar. Any items to pull down here? Over here?
I'll pull A4.
Shocking. Can I hear?
Is, from what I understand, taken an older resolution that was passed and updating it. And reading the resolution, getting familiar with it, I found myself agreeing with quite a bit of it. And hearing the conversation tonight and talking to some of the fishing interests, I certainly understand their perspective and concern, because obviously we do have a lot of existing regulation that was pointed out tonight. But I think my main area of concern with the resolution is on the second page. It's the second whereas from the bottom. The paragraph that talks about whereas the city of Morro Bay feels that the city, county, and San Luis Obispo and state of California opposition to offshore oil are the best protection of the coast of San Luis Obispo from this potential degradation. So essentially it talks about offshore oil drilling being a concern for the city, which I completely agree with, and I understand some of the fishing community wouldn't agree with that, but overall I think we need to look no further than Santa Barbara for the oil spill there and to the Gulf of Mexico recently for the impacts to not only fishing interests, marine interests, but tourism and overall economic interests. So for me, I find myself very concerned with the city stepping back and saying that we're comfortable with the county and the state's opposition to offshore oil drilling, protecting us and our local area. We all know that we have existing offshore oil leases within the county, and I anticipate, and we're seeing, increase that would be possible. I guess I find myself thinking, though, that the offshore oil potential risk is strong enough to not be able to support this resolution tonight. So I hope this conversation will go on, and I plan on taking Jeremiah up on his offer to sit down and talk more. I think that there has been, for rightfully so, not much room for common ground from the fishing perspective, but I'm hopeful that we can keep on discussing this concept and work towards better protections from the offshore oil drilling in our county, because I think that's something that's very important for us. So that's my spiel.
Would you support the resolution if we take that whereas out?
I think I could, because essentially it's not saying that the conversation's over. It says that we see the values of local control being an important component, that we don't see the current program offering that as much as it should. Reading through the different whereases, it was hard to disagree with the other components. We recognize the threat of offshore oil drilling. And overall, I don't think that this resolution with the removal of that closes the door on continued discussion and dialogue. So I would have to support it if you remove that.
Then I would like to move that we approve item A4. Removing
oil, we have that.
You know, you just said you would support this if we removed this.
Well, I'm just, hold on here. Let me just double check that.
May I make a comment while he's double checking? I received, probably as each of you did, an email from our former mayor, Janice Peters, who was asking us to please strongly support this resolution, because she was involved back when this was first approved in 2003, and the lack of adequate resolved conflicts and concerns in commercial fishing industry, as it states in our last paragraph, she says it's just so important that has not happened, that we really need to strongly support this proclamation. And partly because of that, but because I also firmly believe in it, I would support it, even if we take out that one paragraph. But I think the rest of it has to be here. So did you give you enough time, Noah?
Yeah, I think so. I mean, ultimately, this resolution isn't the end. It's a piece of paper. It's a resolution. The point that the dialogue should continue, that we have some serious risks to our fishery and our economy, that's the issue here. So in the spirit of a continued dialogue, appreciating that you're willing to remove that one whereas that I had concern with, and that the city's general concern for offshore oil exploration is still exhibited in this, I will support it.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Oppose. Motion. Think, and then we'll take a break.
D1?
D.
If you wouldn't mind, special request here.
I'm listening.
Could we do D3 while Mr. Abrams is in the audience?
Yeah, sure. It's okay with Nancy, so I've got the approval. I can't find... Oh, yes, ma'am. Okay. D3, Noah. Hal, we're addressing you now. Go ahead.
Okay. D3 is our item here regarding the city support of the community FM radio application. And I just wanted to thank you for hearing this right now.
No problem.
Mr. Abrams, I don't think we'll need any comments from you, but if we have some questions,
thank you.
That you're staying around. So Mr. Abrams did a nice review of this concept during the public comments. Essentially what we're asking for is that the city give preliminary authorization dependent on final approval from the Public Services Director for locating the antenna, the broadcast antenna, at the city corporation yard. And that we do that as soon as possible because of the application process. As Mr. Abrams said, this would be a non-commercial, non-profit radio that would be available to many different aspects of the community and also to broadcasting city council meetings. A couple of other things I'd like to ask the council to do tonight in our action is support the drafting of a letter that would provide formal comment to the FCC for our application at 772-1314. That's monetary support or any other item of your interest that you think would help get this radio station off the ground. So tonight I just want to affirm that we have full council support for this, that we're ready to host the antenna, and that we will draft a letter of support for the application process.
I'm just going to say so moved, because you just stated it succinctly.
Great.
Second.
Okay. Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed? Motion carries 5-0. Hal, we are behind you, and we wish you luck, and I know Noah's working with you, and we'll look forward to the day we get to flick the switch and hear you broadcasting. And we will take a break, and we'll come back to public hearing. Yeah, that's a good thing when you're waiting for you to turn your back. Ready, Rob? B1, Rob.
Good evening again. In front of you this evening as B1 is the introduction and first reading of Ordinance 577, which would amend and rename the Morro Bay Municipal Code 924 to secondhand smoking regulations. At your February 14th meeting, you gave direction to the council, to the staff, to come back with an ordinance that would ban smoking in the Morro Bay in the following areas, and there's one ordinance would enact a tobacco control ordinance that is stronger than the protections provided by state and federal law. It would focus those protections on indoor and enclosed places and outdoor public places. This basically would ban all smoking in all public spaces. However, the ordinance does provide no regulation with regards to private, residential, and multifamily properties. And it also provides for three major exceptions. Those three major exceptions are that you could smoke within designated smokers' outposts. You could also smoke in an unenclosed area where there's no non-smoker present, and during the time of day, no one is expected to be in that area. And the third one would be if the person is actively passing on a way to another designation, so long as no smoke enters into an enclosed area. So with that, Ordinance 577 is with you. I'm here for any questions to answer, or you should open it up for the public comment.
Questions for Rob, Carla, Nancy, George, Noah? This is a public hearing. If any of you would like to address us, this is the appropriate time. Step right up. Hi.
Hi. It's me again.
Kathleen Carley, Public Health Department, a division manager.
I was here, you know, we've talked about a lot of things since I've been here in the past couple of weeks. I thought this time I would bring some other statistics for you. Because last time when we talked, there was many people that said, you know, I know somebody that lived to be 80 and they smoked and they didn't die from it. Or I worked in a bar all these years and there was all this smoke and nothing happened to me. And it is true. Not everyone who smokes dies from it. Not everyone who's exposed to secondhand smoke gets cancer from it. But may interact with environmental factors differently than others. In other words, those with longevity coded into their DNA may be protected from some of the unhealthful acts of living. So in other words, we don't know which of us are protected and which of us are not protected. They did a study in Europe, 2006, and it was just looking at lung cancer, the risk of developing lung cancer. And this was just for men. There's different statistics for women. But for a man who's never smoked, the risk of developing lung cancer was 0.2%. For a man who used to smoke but quit, his risk of developing lung cancer was 5.5%. For a current smoker who smoked a moderate amount of cigarettes, his risk of developing lung cancer was 15.9%. And for a heavy smoker, male, risk of developing lung cancer was 24.4%. So the risk goes up based on what they call pack years. That's the number of packs that somebody smokes and the number of years that they smoke it. But it's only a percentage. Again, you can find somebody who's 80 that smoked all their life and didn't get it. The problem is we don't know which one of us are going to be affected and which one of us are not going to be affected. You all know Dr. Vaughn. He was here last time and he talked to you. I worked with Dr. Vaughn for years at San Luis Medical Clinic, Mission Medical Associates. I was the education director, and I used to teach smoking cessation classes. I'm also an ex-smoker, so I know both sides of it, believe me. You know, I smoked for 20 years. I understand how difficult it is to quit. And people would come into me all the time and say, you know, people always told me to quit and I never listened to them. And by the time they finally decide to quit, it's usually people would tell him for years to quit and he never listened to them. And
I have to ask you to conclude.
Okay. He developed emphysema and his oxygen tank blew up in his face. For most of us, difficult. Thank you.
Sorry to cut you off. Who would like to go next? Good evening, John.
Good evening, Mr. Mayor, members of the council. My name is John Barta. I'd like to offer some suggestions on your smoking ordinance. First, I need to disclose something. I'm a lifetime non-smoker. I don't think it's a healthy or clean habit, and you know, I just don't like it. My wife has asthma, and I've firsthand experienced how much suffering can be caused when people get a lot of secondhand smoke through her experience. However, having said that, I'd like to make some suggestions regarding what we should pass along to the visitors that come to Morro Bay. As you know, we're a tourist town. A lot of people come from outside. So to help them cope with the smoking ordinance, I'd like to suggest that they wear a coat. They put sunscreen on when it's not foggy. They wear a hat to keep the sun off the tops of their heads. And lastly, to bring a tape measure, okay? Bring a tape measure. That's so you can measure the 20 feet that you've got to measure to the distance that you have to avoid smoke. And, of course, you want to bring some binoculars and a map so you can find your way to the smokers' outposts, wherever they may be. Perhaps we could have a tour that we need and not ordinances that are written 8 pages. Okay, 8 pages this ordinance is long. So my suggestion is that you limit the ordinance to indoor places and rely on common courtesy outside. Thank you.
Thank you, John. Taylor, are you come on up? And then Nancy, you want to speak? Okay.
Hello, my name is actually my hair's all terrible. My name's Taylor.
We have a no hat rule.
I wouldn't be surprised. My name is Taylor Newton. I'm a citizen of Morro Bay as well as a business owner. I smoked cigarettes for 10 years. I currently chew tobacco. And a number of my family members have been smokers, and many of them are still tobacco chewers. We also have a number of family members who have died of lung cancer and emphysema. My grandfather currently has emphysema. My family here in Morro Bay are smokers, and I applaud. I think it's very honorable what this resolution is trying to do, and I think that inevitably, you know, you'll see these kind of things happen as we try to become a healthier species. But at the same time, personally, from my personal vote and my personal opinion, I love America. And every time somebody tells me I can't do something, it just really pisses me off. And I think common courtesy is an essential part of who we are. And to have rules show us how we're supposed to behave instead of having us as people determine if everything's about America from the age I was old enough to read about America is the freedom that we have here. And every time we talk about taking away freedom, it scares me. And that's what I have to say.
Thank you, Taylor. Nancy?
Nancy Barta, resident of Morro Bay. And I'm here to speak about the smoking ban, but I want to speak as an asthmatic who, if I'm exposed to smoke, it can take me on my breathing machine anywhere from 3 days to a week to recover. So I hate smoke, and I avoid it. The good news is, in this town, I don't have a problem. If I want to go out for coffee in the morning, I can go to Top Dog. They don't allow smoking in front of their place. For the smokers, they can go around the corner to Rock Espresso and smoke in front. And I avoid Otter Rock. I cannot think of another place in town that I really have to avoid or that I have a problem with. I have more of a problem with perfume. We could ban perfume in town. Be the first in the country to ban perfume to protect people. I'm uncomfortable with the ban. I find it an invasion of privacy. I think policing it will be really complicated. And I think we have enough things that we've banned in town that we're going to have to make bigger signs for the stuff that we can't do in town. That's not very welcoming. It bothers me. And actually, when I researched cities that have banned cigarette smoking in public places.
Good evening. My name is Chanel Channing, Morro Bay. And I'm really glad earlier that Joe brought up the Constitution. I want to remind everybody that not even King George III tried to ban smoking outdoors. And that what our founding fathers understood was that whenever a government tries to create a utopia, it ultimately becomes a tyranny. And we don't want to risk that. We don't want to risk also alienating our tourists. We do tend to advertise to a number of regions that have a high number of smokers. And so we're asking for that opportunity to alienate them. And I don't know if we can afford that. I also oversee a couple homes that are low-income homes. I'm not a smoker myself, but I see how difficult it is for them to ever really stop it. It's like the one thing they have left. You know, they're living on Social Security. A lot of them are bored because they can't really work, and it kind of helps them. And I've even read literature that it helps people who hear voices control the voices, and that came from medical journals. Finally, I would like to make a comment about the Public Health Department statement that was here. If you notice, everything that was stated wasn't about the impact of smoking outdoors on other people. It was about their own individual smoking. And getting back to our Constitution, our rights to life.
To begin.
I'll just throw a couple comments out and then wait till it goes down the line. I appreciate everyone's comments, and it is a very divided issue. Actually, you don't have a protected right to smoke, but I have a protected right to not be invaded by someone smoking. Just for clarification, it is not a constitutionally protected right. And I see it. I agree. I don't like more regulation. I don't see it as not visitor friendly. I see it just the opposite, as being visitor friendly. I don't think it has hurt the tourism in a neighboring community like San Luis Obispo, who has gone totally smokeless. And there are people who don't follow the rules. It's going to be passive enforcement. What I do see from this is even a secondary part of it, which is protecting our estuary. And so for me, I see that as a secondary benefit in moving forward with adding more regulation to outdoor smoking in hopes of the added benefit of that. So with that, I'm going to just pass it down for now.
Nancy. Just a couple of things. We've been through this. This is our third time around with this issue. I'm like most of you. I don't like to see extra regulations, but I think sometimes they're necessary. I mean, secondhand smoke, we know, is a health hazard. We've heard it. We've seen the results. We've seen the statistics. And, you know, we already try to control some other health hazards since. I don't think common sense is nearly as readily available as we like to think it is. And I don't think common courtesy for smokers is. I mean, when you have to cross the street illegally, jaywalking, to get away from people smoking on the sidewalk, which has happened. And freedom runs two ways. Those people who don't smoke, who are don't want to impair their health, also have a right to be able to walk on our sidewalks and in our streets without having secondhand smoke in your face. Previous speakers discussed the dangers of secondhand smoke, which we've been over several times, and all those statistics. But the thing that really got me thinking about this was when the young man who worked at the drive-up window at Taco Bell came twice to talk to us at City Council and said how distressing it was to have people blowing smoke in his face while he was trying to give them their food. That's unconscionable. It's not common courtesy. It's not common sense. And that's the way I feel about it. So I will move on.
Well, I mean, I agree with the speakers. I think we're just taking too many liberties away. I think the statistics, with all due respect to public health, all you talked about smokers. This isn't about smoking. Acknowledge smoking's bad. I'll buy into all your percentages. This isn't about that. This is a big Central Coast Seafood truck pulls up, diesel, and they've got another motor up there to keep their freezer going. And we're smelling this, and when the admiral or the princess starts up, whoa. If you're sitting at Sunshine Health Foods and somebody starts a car literally right next to you, you're breathing that stuff. We're not going to outlaw cars. If you want to take 10 smokers and a non-smoker and put them in my garage for an hour, and all the smokers can smoke for an hour, and we'll see how the smoker is at the end of an hour. He'll be alive, and then we'll put my car in there, and we'll let it run for an hour, and we'll see how the non-smoker is doing. The non-smoker will be dead. We know there's worse things. Barbecues. Carla's husband works. He's a barbecue guy. He's sitting there. Everybody knows barbecue smoke, wood smoke, is carcinogenic. We did receive an email from a lady who claimed, I don't know that this is true, but she said that wood-burning fireplace smoke is 40 times more carcinogenic than cigarettes. Smokers do not want to offend non-smokers. You know, I'm sorry for people with Nancy's condition. I understand, you know, how intense that is. I'm glad she pointed out perfume's even worse for her. It's about liberty. We're just losing our liberties. It's silly. We have a lot of European tourists here. Why would we want to lose any of those? I mean, people don't not come here because we allow smoking. I mean, I think we can all agree with that. We're not going to bring more people here. But we can potentially get people not to come here. And we have restaurants and business on matters of business, of helping this community thrive, instead of third time, when you come back another time. This is getting out of hand, and I especially object to the signage language in here. Are we going to put no smoking signs all over town? Even San Luis Obispo and Calabasas hasn't done that. I will give them credit that you can walk down the street in San Luis Obispo and you don't see a no smoking sign. I got after Joe once because of the no smoking signs in here in the community center, and they're everywhere. And I said, hey, you've got a sign on the door. It says, because I'm an anti-sign, especially signs that say no. It says you can't smoke in the building. He said, oh, no, they'll smoke inside. And so I lost that. And, the no smoking signs are still on all the walls everywhere. But I can't imagine. He differs with me, and I don't come to all the receptions that he does, that anybody would come into a public building and light up. But he says it happens, so I'm not going to argue with our Rec and Parks director. I just think this is silly. We're wasting our time here. The comparisons are not relative to the issue. I think all the testimony with the younger people last time was all about the same thing, about I have a grandfather, and he died of lung cancer, and smoking's bad, and we acknowledge smoking's bad. This is not about that. This is about regulating secondhand smoke and on the sidewalks, and that's, to me, just going too far. When Rob had his long list, I said I could support it all, because that long list he had, lines, ATMs, smokers don't. Everybody who knows me, who spends a lot of time with me, knows I always try to position myself downwind. I think smokers have a little more common courtesy than we're given credit for. So I think it's obvious what's going to happen here, and it's pretty obvious that I'm going to vote against this. George.
Well, I spoke about this for a long time the last meeting, and no use repeating myself again. But I'll be honest with you. I have had a tremendous amount of phone calls, and they all said, hey, you're right on with this because, we don't need any more regulations. And really, secondhand smoke, has it really been proven outside if it really bothers people that much? I mean, these are the questions that people tell me on the phone. Not one person called me up and says, boy, you on the wrong side on this one. So I just wonder, who are we representing here? We talked to a couple of business people, and they said they didn't like the smoke coming in their stores. I talked to business people, and they say, hey, husbands stand outside smoking, and wives are in spending money. I seen that today at my daughter-in-law's place. There was two guys standing outside smoking, and their wives were in her shop just spending money like mad. They put their cigarette out. I watched them. They walked in, got some coffee from her, came out, had another cigarette. The wives continue to spend money. So I don't know how many people we're going to eliminate by advertising we are a non-smoking town. I don't care if we only lose 1%. Can we afford to lose 1%? We, especially down on the waterfront, the wind's always blowing. But just the regulation part of it just bothers me. I mean, as Bill said, signs, no, no, no. I get tired of seeing signs. Don't do this. Don't do that. Looks like we're Bill and I are going to lose on this one. But I don't think we have really got the people's feelings here. I wonder if we put this to a vote, what would have happened in this town. Been pretty interesting. Anyway, we beat this thing to death, and I just think that, I would like to put this off, but it ain't going to happen, I guess.
Yeah, thank you. What some of the statistics that we've been provided do talk about, not in this report, but in previous reports, do talk about the impacts of secondhand smoke. And I think the important thing to remember here is that this is very strongly a passive enforced type regulation. And essentially what it's doing is giving a sensitive person that's very sensitive to smoking, whether they're a young person, someone that has asthma, or elderly, the opportunity, the legal opportunity and support to take action and make a request. And hopefully this will not be necessary and relied upon, and most people will follow the rules and be courteous like we've talked about. But in cases that we've heard from some businesses that have showed up here and from talking to people that have contacted us that have initiated this concept, locals and people within the county, that there is a problem. And there aren't currently any sign ordinance, but the sign component in here. We're talking about a no smoking sign or a smoke-free sign, which there's no size that basically it says not less than 1 inch in height. So the size of the sign is, yeah, it's very modest. It's not going to be massive signage. And personally, I think that will help attract people to Morro Bay as a clean place to recreate and to enjoy a healthy lifestyle. It's part of who we are. And I definitely agree with Ms. Borchard that when we have beach cleanups, it's the cigarette butts that we're picking up everywhere, all over town, on the beaches and the piers and the waterfront. And this is a major problem, and I think that this is a modest way to start to create more awareness about it. And I have been contacted by a number of people that are concerned about this, mostly from the regulation side, and I hear them. And when I discuss with them the idea that this is to support those that don't smoke, that are sensitive to it, to help them address that concern or those impacts publicly in public open spaces, most of the people I've talked to have said, well, I can understand that. And what they want to make sure is that we're not going to have the police out there enforcing this, which we've been clear we will not. This is about providing the avenue for the community member to be supported in that request. So I agree that this isn't something we should be spending a lot of extra time on, and it seems like every time this comes up, we're talking about this more than any other item on the agenda. So I will support it tonight. Hopefully move on.
Mind if I make a response? I believe we have passive enforcement now. It happens to me. It happened in front of George once. Somebody says it bothers me, would you put it out? I'll put it out. So you don't need the law, because what's the next step? If I'm a dick and I say I'm not going to put that out, what are you going to do? What's your next step now? Now you've got a law so you can call the cops. I mean, if somebody's going to be a jerk, they're going to be a jerk. But my experience with smokers is we don't want to offend anybody. We are sensitive to the whole social thing that's going on, and we have passive enforcement. So that's my response to that. Do you want to go again?
Well, I just, you know, in part of the comments that you and George both made is that this ordinance still provides for smoking outdoors. It's just asking those to be in, and I don't think anybody's being banished to some back parking lot somewhere. It's saying this is a designated area rather than, you know, lining up outside of one of the local taverns, five people down the road or down the sidewalk smoking. It's saying we're asking you to smoke in one area collectively. And so I don't see it as a negative thing in that sense and denying it. And I know one of the speakers talked earlier about going into specific coffee shops because they don't allow smoking on the sidewalk in front, and they don't have the right to regulate that because the city doesn't. So again, it's requesting that people don't, maybe the business request, but you know, if somebody wants to sit out front of that coffee shop and smoke, you can't stop them from it. So I think it's all, again, comes back to, you know, trying to put some guidelines to this and hope that we get, if we get a 50% compliance, yeah, I see that as a win. And I don't see it as being, I agree with Councilmember Smuckler. I see it as a business-friendly move.
Nancy, it's your item. Make the motion.
Okay, I'm ready. I don't need to sit. Where is it? Okay, I move we pass the introduction first reading of Ordinance 577, amending and renaming Morro Bay Municipal Code, Chapter 9.24, to secondhand smoking regulations.
By title and number only.
By title and number only.
I was there, Rob. Thank you, though.
Second.
Discussion?
just one more thing I'd like to say is, if we head down this path and at some point we determine that this is not working in our best interest of this community, it's not set in stone for life that we can't come back and reverse an ordinance and change some of the language. And that's not what the direction I would want to go, but it is always there.
And just to add to that, whereas if we were to take George's suggestion and put it to a vote of the public, it's much harder to change than it would be if it doesn't work, although I think it will work, and I have nothing more to say at the moment.
All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries 3-2. B2.
Joe. Mayor.
Yes. Oh, I'm sorry. Would you read the title, please?
This is ordinance number 577, an ordinance of the City Council of the City of Morro Bay amending section 9.24 of the Morro Bay Municipal Code entitled Smoking and Fires Prohibited on City Beaches and Piers and renaming section 9.24 Secondhand Smoking Regulations.
Thank you so much, Joe.
Good evening, Mayor. Let's see if I can get this thing going. Good evening, Mayor and Council. On January the 26th, 1998, Council adopted Resolution 1098, which accepted the public improvements of the Cloisters Track 1996. Although the public improvements were completed, the developer was still responsible for the maintenance for 1 year. And after that year, warranty was up, the city took over the maintenance of the Cloisters Assessment District January 26, 1999. After the initial formation of this assessment district, each year we have a series of public hearings to confirm the levy of the assessment in the upcoming fiscal year. The first meeting, which is tonight, is a public hearing initiates the annual levying process and directs the preparation of the engineer's report. The second hearing approves the engineer's report and notices the intent to levy the assessment. And the third public hearing actually levies the assessment on the upcoming fiscal year. Resolution 1612 has been prepared for City Council's review and adoption. The resolution serves as the initial initiation of the annual assessment proceedings and orders the engineer's report detailing the proposed cost of the maintenance of the Cloisters Park and open space for the purpose of assessing the private property owners in the track map 1996. The resolution also gives notice that the public hearing of the intent to levy the assessment, review and acceptance of the engineer's report, which is tentatively scheduled for May the 8th, which is next month. Staff recommends the City Council adopt Resolution 1612, ordering the preparation of the engineer's report detailing the expenses projected for the fiscal year 12-13 for the maintenance of the Cloisters Open Park and Open Space and Park.
Any questions before we open it up to the public? This is a public hearing. If any of you would like to address us, this is the time. Seeing none, I'll bring it back to Council. Start with you, Noah.
Yeah, thank you. I'm glad we had the opportunity to be updated on the maintenance contract and progress at the last meeting, because that certainly helps us show that we are striving for fulfilling our commitments, our side of the commitment for maintenance of the parkways as agreed. We still have work to do. We cannot let our recent actions and progress slide, but overall, you know, I hear the concern from some of the Cloisters owners, homeowners, and yet it would be very challenging for me to go back on this, and I will support this. I'm committed to holding up our end of the bargain for the maintenance side and making sure that we do not allow the sort of maintenance that we had been seeing over the last couple of years return. We need to keep a high standard and provide the sort of maintenance that's warranted for this amount of an assessment.
Not at this point.
Sure, I'll jump in there. We met with Mr. Woods today to talk about this before tonight. We had an opportunity, myself and Councilmember Johnson, to speak with some of the members of the Cloisters last week. And here's their concerns and their comments about accountability and transparency and how their money's being used. So as much as I think we all applaud the efforts that have been made, and I walked out there this morning, and it looks good. I think for a lot of them, they feel that this has been happened before, and then it falls in disrepair. They've been promised things before, and then it lasts for a little while, and kind of just we start slacking. What I'm hopeful is that as we've kind of turned the corner and we head down this path now, is that we will be outsourcing the cloister's maintenance in the future, looking at private business taking it over, who will be able to manage it in a more efficient and affordable way, and also to include in that each year the Parks and Rec Department would provide, or the city, I should say, would provide a copy of what of accountability of what they spent the money on, how much for labor, how much for plant replacement, and start moving in a direction to put aside some money for capital improvements that need to desperately be done out there, which is a concern for them. And I think that by privatizing the services there, we should have the ability to have excess money. But I think that the transparency component is really important. And when speaking with Mr. Woods today, there was a discussion about them offering each year to meet with the Cloister's property owners in advance of this to provide them that information, how much has been spent on maintenance, how much on plants, what they've done, establish a sort of schedule of capital projects similar to what he's done with the maintenance of our buildings and things, and what those prices might be and when they're going to get to them over the next, you know, this year, next year. Meet with them ahead of time and be able to be accountable. I think the transparency is huge, and I'm hopeful that and optimistic that we're going to make good things happen out there for these property owners.
Well, I'm conflicted. You know, I've got my old feelings. As you know, the last time I voted for this was the only time I've ever voted for it. I do appreciate the efforts that you've made and, you know, what's happened. This isn't about that, my feelings. My feelings are about the the issue of equity with all the city residents. There's a public park down there that is being paid for by the 100 or so Cloister's residents. And if it was their park exclusively, I would support them paying 100% of it. But since we all enjoy it, I'm going to revert back to the way I've voted on this since the 90s and say that all the parks are for everybody, that none of us up here live in the Cloister's and we do not pay into a fund to maintain Del Mar or Monte Young or Anchor Memorial or any of the other fine parks that we have in Morro Bay. And I think that the Cloister's Park should be folded into the park system and be funded by the general fund like all the other parks. So I'm going to vote against it, and I'm just fair warning, I'm going to be consistent on this and vote against it from now on, as I always have, except for that one time, which should not be taken as a negative reflection on the efforts you've made, Joe. It's not about that at all. It's about philosophy. So that's where I'm at. Who would like to go next?
I'm just going to throw in. Oh, go ahead, Nancy.
Oh, I was just going to say that I found our discussion with Mr. Woods very helpful and very useful today. And I realized after that while I concur with what the mayor says about the public park, there are a lot of other things out there, including the parkways, the wetlands, which need to be monitored, the walkways out there that need a lot of help to get them back in the right order. There's some seating, some informational panels, a lot of things that I didn't really realize that this money goes to. Having said that, I think that what Ms. Borchardt just said earlier about the transparency and coming back with some real information for the citizens of that area, so that for all of us really, so that we know by the dollar, or at least dollars, where the money's going. I mean, what percent goes to that public park? What percent goes to other areas out there that need to be maintained? And I think maintenance is probably a really important part. So I'm going to vote for this tonight based on the contingency that you're going to come back with that information by the third time around. As best you can, at least some of it.
Nothing other than I agree with that. And I think all of the residents appreciated the outreach that Mr. Woods provided to get their input, and I do agree that we need to continue that standard, and I'm looking forward to seeing the performance of the private contractor out there.
Offer you the motion approving resolution 1612.
So moved.
Second.
Discussion? All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries 4-1. Have you voted for that, George? Just checking. B3, Joe.
Honorable Mayor and Council, on December the 9th, 1996, City Council adopted Resolution 8996, which ordered the formation of the North Point Landscaping and Lighting Assessment, Lighting Maintenance Assessment District, and confirmed the annual assessment. In January of 1997, City Council adopted Resolution 0197, which approved and accepted the on- and off-site improvements of Track 2110 and officially started the city's maintenance of the North Point Natural Area. Again, this is the first meeting of the series of three. I won't belabor the details of those meetings. A resolution that you have in front of you is 1712, which has been prepared for your review and adoption. The resolution serves as obviously starting the annual assessment proceedings and orders the engineer's report detailing the proposed cost for the maintenance of the North Point Natural Area for the purpose of assessing private property owners and the track, which is map number 2110. The resolution also gives notice of a public hearing of the intent to levy the assessment, review, and acceptance of the engineer's report, which will be tentatively scheduled for May the 8th again, which is next month. Staff recommends Council adopt Resolution 1712, ordering the preparation of the engineer's report detailing the expenses of the projected for the fiscal year 2012-13 for the maintenance of North Point Assessment District.
Questions for Joe before I open it up?
Yes, I'd like to know, we have talked in concept about this also being part of an RFP, the maintenance side going forward. Is that something that you're still considering?
Staff is very seriously considering folding in this assessment district with the Cloisters District for our RFP for the next fiscal year.
Great. Thank you.
Anything else? Would any of you like to address council on this? This is the appropriate time. Seeing none, I will bring it back to council. Start with you, Carla.
I agree with Councilmember Smucklers. We spoke with Mr. Woods. We expressed a desire also to see this be included just the same as the Cloisters, recognizing it's a separate assessment area. It still has the ability to be contracted with the same, or I would guess the same contractor, and it's got much more minimal needs. I would say that I hope that we have an opportunity to pay a little more attention to it as I walk that area also. The dumpsters are overflowing and there's trash everywhere, and which is not, that's the garbage company and people dumping up there, and some concerns with some of the traffic that's going into areas that shouldn't be. So hopefully if we fold this into the assessment or to the contractor, we'll have a little bit of extra revenue there also to care for some of the needs on that district.
I agree with both Mr. Smuckler and Ms. Borchard. I once again say that I think maintenance up there is going to be the issue. I know, having talked to you, that there are things that need to be repaired and replaced, and we just have to keep up on these things. Thank you.
Yeah, just to go on the capital improvement side, that North Point area and the Cloisters are both just very, very nice spots in our community, and it will be nice to see hopefully some more money put aside to continue to improve the hardscape components because those have degraded considerably.
Somebody make a motion, please.
Move approval of D2.
How about B3? Discussion. All in favor say aye.
Aye.
Opposed? No. Motion carries 4-1. D1. Andrea.
Thank you. Good evening, Mayor and Council. This item is on your agenda for you to provide direction to city staff regarding how you would like to discuss the upcoming budget, fiscal year 2012-2013 budget. The dates that we were hoping you can work around is the budget, the preliminary budget document will be available on May 25th of this year. And traditionally, we have adopted the budget at one of our two meetings in June, either the 12th or the 26th. I will put it back into your realm to discuss workshops or public hearings or how you would like to handle that.
Okay. Can I go first, Council? Any objections there? You know, I think it worked really good this past year. We did it at City Council meeting at a public hearing, and we came up with $1,200,000 for streets, and we did it all in about a 90-minute period. And I have been through this process, everything from less than that to three separate workshops over 20 hours. So I'm a proponent of doing it at a city council meeting as a public hearing. If you feel it necessary to do it twice, we've got two dates in June. We could hear it on the 12th, and if we don't get it settled, we can bring it back on the 26th, but I would try to keep that agenda light and get through it that night. That would be my goal. Nancy?
I don't know. I see a value to public hearing, to maybe a workshop hearing. I don't know that we have that much money to actually make any big decisions or spend, so maybe that is just kind of a waste of some time. I don't know. I'm certainly willing to listen to all theories on this whole thing.
I remember, if you'll indulge me with a comment, I remember one year we had three separate workshops.
That's a lot.
Probably 15 hours worth, and when it was all said and done, we moved about $30,000 around. And it was even, we were all kind of going, you know, why did we do all that? But that was just me. George.
I like it just the way we did it before. It was perfect.
Carla.
Well, I'm going to be the dissenter here and say that I, although we were successful last year, I didn't feel that there was as much transparency in the process of allowing public comment and public participation. I will certainly agree that three workshops is excessive, and I'm not looking for that, but I feel that we have a responsibility to the community to allow them to participate and do that prior. We have 2 weeks, really, to go through the entire city budget as a council and a community both, and there's a lot of questions that come up, and we try and do our homework before we get here, but that's not always afforded to all the public in not knowing where the resources are or how to go about getting that information. So I'm not supportive of having three budget workshops, but I'm certainly looking at an opportunity to have community input other than just public comment, whether it be in the form of meeting an hour beforehand or however council sees, you know, an opportunity to provide that and have some of that discussion.
Thanks. Noah?
Yeah, I would agree, and I think one of the values of having a preliminary meeting before the public hearing is I'm always very interested to hear from the department heads what their different decision points were with the budget, and then overall from the city manager, where there has been some potential for them to shift funds around, if there were key things that they're wrestling with. I think it's valuable for us as a council and a community to be able to provide them some preliminary input before we get to that public hearing, which at that point we're really starting to tie ourselves down to a final number and a final approved budget. So overall, yes, we might not end up with very much of a different picture, but the budget is probably the most important thing that we develop over the course of a year, and I think it warrants a little more time and effort, particularly so that everyone gets a chance to hear the thought and ideas and rationale behind our decision with that. So I thought last year was very light. We did make some good decisions through that, but it was overall, it just seemed like, wow, this didn't give us enough time to look at the most important document that we look at for the year.
And where do you go?
Okay. One of the things that I've heard from public comment once at our goal setting workshop, and another time just in a meeting with some people, was listening to the citizens and having real transparency with what our government's doing and what we're doing. That being said, between the 25th of May and the 12th of June, that is 2 weeks, is that about right? 2 weeks and a couple of days. Okay, I definitely do not want to see three workshops, but I also don't want an hour just before a staff meeting. I'd like to see maybe one workshop before a city council meeting. I'm sorry, I misspoke. I'd like to see one workshop maybe with staff, with department heads and us and the citizens, a couple of hours maybe at the most, just to hear what departments have to say. It makes it a lot clearer, I think, for all of us. It makes it easier to understand so that when we come to the public hearing and the meeting on the 12th, we have a little bit better background. So I would suggest maybe one workshop, but not just the day of our council meeting.
Is that what you're on board with?
Well, I'm not, and I can tell you right now, for me, the finance director can save her time and not providing a budget 101. I think we're all past budget workshop 101. I don't even want to sit through it again. Sorry. It's enough already. But yeah, 4 to 6 or something, it would afford people after work and, a window there where if they get off at 5 or have to go to work in the evening or something, a 4 to 6 couple hours would be good for me.
Are you suggesting before a council meeting?
I'm open to either. Well, if you would prefer to roll it in before a council meeting, I think, that's fine. Yeah. We're set up and we're here. And
I'm mixed.
Doesn't take a separate time frame.
Yeah, that's the positive. Mm-hmm. The negative is that it makes
for an awfully
long.
Maybe we can have a little lighter agenda.
Well, I think, pardon me for butting in, but my concern would be if that meeting was held before the first budget hearing, what the idea with this is to have a preliminary chance to get a glimpse of what the concepts are going in, the thought process going in, so that you can then take that back, digest it, reach out to people, get some more input, and go into those hearings with a better idea about what the priorities are. And if there are some changes, you've had a chance for some dialogue outside of that hearing setting, which is a really tough place to have true dialogue.
Well, we could do it. I mean, I'm okay for a separate meeting. Just so you know up front, I'm open. But we could do it on the 12th. 2 hours before.
Oh, well, we can't. There's no. I mean, by the time we get the budget, it's after our last meeting in May, and so there is no other scheduled meeting until council, unless we do a separate meeting from the time we get it.
Well, I'm backing up to. It can't be too close to the 25th.
No.
I mean, we have to. It can't be before, let's say, June 2nd, because we've got to have at least a week to digest it.
Well,
so you brought up the idea. Excuse me, Nancy. It's all right. Of the possibility, and I've already stated I'm open either way, before a meeting. I'm mm-hmm. suggesting we do it before the meeting on the 12th, 2 hours, but we don't bring it back for a final until the 26th. So we've got it for 2 weeks plus a couple of days before we meet on the 12th. We meet at 4 o'clock that day. So 4 to 6 is budget, and that's the public hearing, and then we don't bring it back for approval until the 26th, so we've got another 2 weeks then to grind on what happens that night and the input that we get from the public, and we can have another public hearing on the 26th as well.
So I'm a little confused. You're saying 2 hours on the 12th before the meeting.
Correct.
And then still do the public hearing that night at 7 o'clock.
Well, no, I think the 2 hours before would be a public hearing.
Okay.
Just
and
on the
then
budget.
When do we discuss it? The 26th? The public hearing would be the 26th?
Yes. Well, no. We've got a public hearing on the 12th.
Right. That's our budget workshop, so to speak.
Yeah, but we'd call
for
it
2 hours.
But we'll call it we're not going to call it a workshop.
But then will it still be agendized later in
that
the meeting?
That doesn't make sense. We've just discussed
right.
it
That's
for
what
2 hours.
Okay.
But the 26th is still public hearing. For
but then
budget.
The 26th
yes.
is public. That's
yes.
what I wanted to clarify. You know, just one other point. I think since this is an election year, having this extra time to discuss the budget and inviting all these people who are running for election is going to really make it a lot clearer to new people about what the process is and how it works. So whether we do it 2 hours before a meeting or in another day like June 2nd or so.
That's just before the election. I think that's going to be a little challenging.
That is challenging.
And
right.
we're
that's
not
the day before the election. Let's forget
we're not responsible for the, you know, educating. We can't even guarantee they'll be here or they'll watch it on
well,
TV.
I know, but we can invite them.
Well,
that's all we have to do.
The public is invited.
The public is all invited.
Yeah. So do I feel a consensus here that we can meet at 4 p.m. on the 12th and have a 2-hour public hearing just on the budget?
Workshop, hearing, whatever.
Well, I'm going to call it a public hearing. Okay. There's a difference
yes.
to me. And then we will have another final public hearing on the 26th.
So what will that look like then on the 12th? The 2-hour workshop hearing.
Well, that would be up to staff's presentation.
Let's talk about that a little bit.
Mm-hmm. What I think I heard.
Let's make the decision on if we're okay with this, and then we can go to that. Would that work for you?
Well, part of my approval or support of that would be to understand what the format would be for that hearing, and then also recognizing we all know that if there is a substantive issue that keeps us from approving it on the 26th, that the hearing could be continued. So we do have time there. So that's a comfort to know that it would extend if necessary.
Okay.
So I think that could work. I just want to talk a little more about what's the format for that 2-hour meeting.
You know, I feel like you're putting Andrea on the spot here unless you've got a lucid answer.
Oh, I always have a lucid answer.
Okay.
I really, what we would anticipate doing is giving a brief presentation on each department and what the budget entails. There's not a lot of wiggle room in any of the department budgets. I think the big issue in our minds is we are not allocating any of the money that was dedicated to the Community Promotions Committee. So that's an issue that we're leaving alone as department heads, although we'd love to spend that money. You know, that's going to be your direction on what you want to do. So I would anticipate part of that workshop time would be those discussions. But we can really format it to anything that the council desired. We won't be giving each 20-minute presentations, although the department heads want to. I won't have them do that.
So because that was one of the things I was wondering about, would that be where the Chamber of Commerce could also have some time to present to us, or are we thinking that would be before as its own special item?
I believe the chamber is hoping to come before that budget hearing, but I don't know that formally.
Okay. I would hope so, because I think that would be very challenging to get that information that late.
But considering that they'll be presenting to us before and the potential for there to be some dialogue about the details of their proposal, you'd expect that there would be room for them, if necessary, to present, or I guess that would be the public comment side. But that night, that component would obviously be on the table for discussion.
Right, but if they give their presentation before that, they will have told us what they want, you know, given their presentation, and then they would be part of the public hearing. to add to or share or talk about the public comment.
Right. So what I'm seeing is that we're giving some time for, because that's probably going to be the most decisive point of the budget discussion, or one of the key debates. So I like that we're giving time for that to be vetted, and we're not going to be rushing through it, and people will have a chance to talk about their priorities.
Everybody, assuming we can make it all happen in the 2 hours, I'm assuming we can, but you never know. We want everybody to give us their input.
So that'll include public comments, and then each department head given a chance to have a little bit of time to talk about their budget.
I think, like Andrea said, I don't want to dictate how they make their presentation, but I think each department head can take 5-6 minutes and make a presentation. It's pretty simple. Here's our budget. Here's our payroll. Here's our supplies. Here's what we got to do, and we have nothing left over. And if you want to take money away from us, you're gonna have to cut from personnel. And next, and then Joe talks, and then Susan talks, and 35, 40 minutes max. Max. Let's say half an hour. We can work on that with them. And then we've got an hour and a half to, we can include the public and include them beyond how we normally operate. Which means we don't have to have one, this is a public comment period, and you want to discuss with us that, if somebody wants to get up in the middle of something, well, I can recognize them if the chamber wants to make a point or something, or a citizen.
Okay.
As long as I can keep it controlled. It doesn't have to be one block. It can be a little more freeform.
Well, that's good.
Let's see if we can, finish it up by 6.
Okay, and some of the departments may have some exciting initiatives to talk to us about.
Give us a lot more opportunity with the community, too.
Andrea, are you cool? Yes. We've got a consensus here on what we want.
I'm clear.
Okay, cool.
Another question just occurred to me. How will it be communicated to us as far as, will we have a rough draft of the proposed budget before that meeting and available to the public?
On the 25th, right?
At the very latest. We anticipate it might be a little before that, but that will be the latest date you'll get the preliminary budget, on the 25th.
We get it on the 25th. It'll go on the website on the 25th, and, the whole town, those that do that, will pick it apart, and then we'll meet on the 12th.
From 4 to 6 p.m. here.
Right.
Okay.
D2, Andrea.
Well, thank you, and once again, good evening. Council asked us to do some research on the possibility of a paperless agenda for our city council meetings, and it's interesting to note that over now 75 cities in the state of California have gone to some form of paperless agendas. The reading device of choice clearly for these paperless agenda cities is the Apple iPad, along with a variety of software modules that allow for upload of agendas and staff reports. In addition, several cities have looked at the provision of wireless internet in their city council chambers, which we currently have here at the Veterans Hall, as well as wireless internet at their city halls, which we currently do not. Based on the research that we did, purchasing iPads with 15 gigabyte of memory has been found to be sufficient in terms of using for council agendas. Certainly all iPads currently have the capability to access wireless determined prior to doing that, and those are in your staff report, and I'll just briefly review those. Basically, the first one is how the council would prefer the agenda materials to be provided to them. There's a number of options. Some include the purchase of software. Wow. And some do not. So that's one question. The second question is, does the council want to be able to make notes on the packet? On iPads, you can actually make notes. I think City Attorney Rob Schultz was trying to do that tonight on his iPad, and he hasn't perfected that quite yet, but he's capable of doing that. We also need to determine who owns the device. Does the city own the device? Or does the council member, and if so, what restrictions are placed on that device for its use and its storage and such? And then fourth, who should iPads be purchased for? Traditionally, it's been the council members and the department heads, although some of your department heads currently have iPads. And then certainly it's important for our IT professional to have an iPad for proper configuration and such. And then last, if a mobile data-capable iPad is purchased, there also needs to be, as I had mentioned, an accompanying data plan for that iPad. And is that to be purchased by the city or the individual? And then, of course, there's the internet policy that we need to have about what can be used, what the iPad can be used for. So there's a few things to determine. In your staff report, again, just briefly, I've provided some basic costs on iPads version 2 and 3 I chose, and some with mobile data compatible and not. And that information is here, anywhere from five of the least expensive for a total of $2,000 for only city council members to the ability to just use laptop computers versus the iPads. Laptops, as you know, are a little bit bulkier. They're a little bit heavier to deal with. And certainly if an iPad is lost or stolen, there's a way to wipe the slate clean with your iPad, and something that's not, you're not able to do that remotely with your laptop. If the council wants us to look at laptop computers versus iPads, I can certainly bring that back to your next city council meeting. I think when we get down to the bottom line, our costs are going to be somewhat comparable. Laptops might be a little less expensive. We tried to get a number for you for some savings, and I sent an email to Councilmember Smuckler answering a question and CC'd all of you, but it was late this afternoon, so you might not have received that. But just briefly, we put a table in your staff report that talked a little bit about how many copies we make, and generally we make about 23 copies of the agenda packet. Some of those are for public and would be continued to be made, but for the most part, the majority would no longer be made. We looked at meeting dates from January through March, and we determined that we had made over 2,000 copies of agenda materials in that short four-month timeline. I think the information that I gave to Councilmember Smuckler asked for is a cost of what we anticipated it cost for staffing and for copies. And we had about, I think the number was about $34,000 per year, a rough estimate of Ms. Boucher's time and some time for copies. So just to give you an idea. I think in closing, there are some questions you need to answer. We're certainly willing to do more looking into this. It seems like certainly the way to go. I think the only information that I haven't included in the staff report or my presentation is that certainly that this will be an additional impact on our IT department.
No?
I don't have any questions.
George? You know, I think it's great. I'm all in favor of this. You've threw out a lot of questions there, and I would just, you know, if council wants to go along with this, not get into the minutiae of all the policies, just would just buy into the same policies that all you guys have. And, you know, I sure don't want to discuss, you know, what websites we can go on and what we can't go on and all that. I mean, just what's good for you is good for us, I think. I don't want to speak for Noah, but I mean, I see the notes that he makes. He covers a staff report. I would, I like to make notes on mine. I think that would be an important thing that we could make notes on them. Other than that, I think it's a great idea. I think we're years past, but maybe we needed the iPad to kind of catch up to us too. Nancy.
Well, I'm definitely in favor of it. I didn't bring mine tonight, but when I go to EVC meetings and Caps Law, I take it, and rather than make copies of these huge agendas, I just page through it. I don't have the capability or the intelligence to make notes on it, but I sure find a little slip of paper beside my iPad works really well for making notes on agenda items and things. So I really think that it's something whose time has come, and I'm ready to go.
Thank you. I do have a couple questions, and I want to thank Andrea for bringing this forward so quickly. It was interesting when I started looking into this at how many cities had made this leap. And iPads, you said that the department heads have some of them. Are those their own, or are those city-owned?
I believe it's a mixed bag at this point.
So when I looked into some of the information from some of the other districts, about this, and I agree with Mary Yates. I'm not looking to say we should do the two, the three, you know, whatever iPad. To me, the best we can get for our needs as far as cost-wise, I think we would all agree with. But I know in reading some of these articles that they were stored and kept within the city. They weren't taken home as individual units to use outside of the city parameters. And so it was interesting because it kind of said in this one article that they close it all up in some suitcase and it's got a charging station and everything there, and that way it all stays as a city property, which to me, for me, just seems like the appropriate way to do it. And then from that, the discussion could segue into, is this something that Planning Commission could use at some point, and therefore eliminating more copies and more staff time that's doing that? I don't know the answer to that, you know, at this point, but it would be interesting because if they're city-owned property and they're kept, I would think that they could be used for that also. So I'm on board for moving forward and getting more information and how we can make this happen, and let Ms. Luker figure out the rest.
The only real question I had was about public access. I know that you said before that we didn't have computer, you know, the city did not give us computers or cell phones because then whatever we put on them becomes public access. Quite caught up with how to use an iPad.
We could certainly do the training, and I think we'll probably spend a little bit more time researching some final details and give that to you perhaps in memo form instead of coming back. There'll also be a budget, a corresponding budget number with all these changes as well.
Rob?
Just as to training, I think I've kind of been the guinea pig a little bit with this, and I'm just about ready to go paperless. There's a program, just real quickly, called Good Notes, which allows you to just basically what the agenda is. I don't need to have the agenda. I can go on our website, immediately open it from our website, and place it into a program called GoodNotes. In that GoodNotes, you'll see the agenda. You can write on that agenda page with your handwriting. You can add a page to it if your handwriting you want to add in between two pages. So you got the whole agenda, and you can add pages to it, write right on it. You can type right on it if you wanted to instead through a keyboard, or you can use a little pin to do it. And that's, I'm almost there. I'm not quite there. I'm still trying to figure out a couple of the nuances on it. But we could take you through training in that program. We just have to figure out some of the policy issues and whether it'd be better to do it by a stipend or by city-owned.
And can we continue to use the library's Wi-Fi in City Hall, or do we need to get our own?
Get our own.
I have a question, too.
And just the other, mine doesn't. I have the Wi-Fi built into it, and I find it's acceptable. You can find Wi-Fi almost anywhere nowadays.
Everything's coming Wi-Fi. And then you asked, excuse me, Noah. You asked a couple questions that I just wanted to feedback on. You know, who should pay for them? I think the city should pay for them. Can we take them home? I think we have to have the ability to take them home. And then when our term's up, we turn them.
Probably use of the iPad, which I don't have one yet. I really appreciate the ability to keep agendas that I know are on issues that are going to be coming back to us, and therefore retain those notes and develop a track record of where things are going. And I guess I have, you know, you call me a little old-fashioned or a Luddite or whatever. I'm finding myself lukewarm to this, mostly because I think I have a system down, and I'm not sure I'll be able to follow and track agenda items as easily as you can now by keeping a file and the kind of the standard way of doing it. So how easy are you able to then consolidate them all into different issues and so on?
You can do your library any way you want that. As you can see from my screen, actually it's in a bookshelf, and that's your library, and each one of those can be a separate agenda item with the date below it. So in some senses, you can just tap on that, and it opens up that agenda item.
With your notes written.
With your notes written right on them, or you could put your library in different categories.
Okay.
So, I mean, like I said, there is changes, and I'm not quite there yet because I was known as binder boy, and I'm doing away with my binders. So it's not easy to make that change, but I think once you're there, it's going to be quite remarkable to be able to find things
okay.
Easier.
And no council member would be precluded from printing out
Obviously.
You can go to Jane and say, I'd like a printed copy of this agenda.
Yeah, which doesn't sound like very much fun.
That's why we have Jamie do it.
The other thing I have I'm concerned about is this. I'm not, and I'd like to see that drawn out a little more because I'd be concerned about that, particularly because if the idea here is to be green, I think there's more efficient ways for us to do that. For me, it's going to come down to the decision of balancing the ease and effectiveness of the iPad versus the ease and effectiveness of the agenda, and the cost, of course, would be weighed in on both of those. But I wouldn't want to sacrifice the ability for us to access information and the public and so on to be green when there's definitely other ways for us to do that. Currently, we use approximately 30%. It sounds like recycled paper that's post-consumer material. So there's very simple ways we could actually increase the percentage of recycled content in the paper we use to 100%, like the state's starting to require. There's other things that we can do. So I'm not finding myself feeling like I need to jump into this to save some trees when there's other ways to do that. So going forward, I definitely think we should get some more information, but I'm feeling a little cautious, and you might be surprised by that.
Yeah, we are. George.
Oh, no, I just want to thank Nancy for ever remembering me, you know. About teaching people about computers.
Well, I could use some training, too. Mine does not always
work. No, I just wanted to thank you, Nancy. I
mean, you're welcome, George.
Let's see if we can give Andrea some direction.
I've fought computers for a long time now. I'm down my restaurants and everything.
Can we just start this again?
Well, I want to comment. I don't think that the expenses for staff time and things then, and based on what the comments have been made in the articles, I've looked at the life of those computers, depending on how they're used, is more than 3 years. They averaged it out over 5 years. And I based on her information she brought, it's between $5,000 to $8,000. And, yes, you are still going to have some printing and some other costs, but I see that as a substantial savings right off the get-go.
Actually, I didn't see a $30,000 to $40,000 cost.
I'm sorry. I misspoke. It was 100, not 1,000.
Oh,
my apologies.
Yeah.
Ms. Boucher gave me the note, and, yeah, my correction.
I was trying to figure that out. And I know that it was over because
it's like 100% of what she makes.
You have the initial cost of making the purchase, but based over the five-year life of them, and I'm going to differ with. And so I have a question for Mr. Schultz. Can you email those into your own computer at home, to your laptop or whatever, all your stuff off there, your notes and everything? So I would disagree that we would, you know, for me, I wouldn't think that they would be something we would take home, because most of us who are going to utilize it have our own computers at home anyway to receive the information. I think that the life of them would last longer if they were maintained in the city's property.
And certainly there's pros and cons to that. Maybe we can look into other cities if you want us to pursue that further. The one thing about the program is, though, is if you're home on the weekend, you've got it open and you're able to write your notes all over the agenda item that you now bring on Tuesday night, you wouldn't be able to do that if you're at home and don't have a second iPad, I guess. So yeah. That would be one of the
That would be the main thing.
I have a follow-up comment.
Okay. Nancy?
But as a very non-technical person, I've learned how to use mine pretty well. And it is so much easier, guys, going to a meeting and not having tons of paperwork.
And I'm
way to go.
I'm on board, but I still don't know if you're getting direction, are you?
I think so. We're going to – I see us coming back with maybe one more staff report, maybe during budget time simultaneously.
Maybe we could have a workshop. Just kidding.
It's a great idea.
Do you have anything on this? You get the final word, no.
Okay, a couple things. In conversation with people that have experienced this before, this sort of a transition before, there is definitely a percentage of the population that aren't able to utilize iPads or computer screens, mostly because of eyesight issues. So we'll definitely have to think about that as we develop this. It's not a hurdle you can't overcome. The other thing, though, is I do appreciate being able to travel with my staff reports and information. So I see what your point is about if those iPads remain at the city, they're going to last much longer and there's more protections there. But there's a need for us to be able to access this information and work with it at almost any time, like we can now with this paperwork, particularly if you're going to meet with someone at a site or so on. It's very handy to have something to refer to and transportable. So those are just some of the nuances to this.
I agree with that, too. I think we need to have possession of them. Is there anything else that – let's ask you, Andrea. Are you cool? You got a
– Yeah, I think I'm fine. Thank you.
Okay. Are we concluded on this then with everybody? Great. Declaration of future agenda items? Noah.
Yeah, I have one that I'd like to – that gets it out in a public discussion and opens the door for – if there are issues, for them to then be communicated to us through the Public Works Advisory Board.
It sounds like a fishing expedition for issues. And
I don't want to start to have a debate here, but I think it's an item that obviously relates to the Public Works Advisory Board. We've received correspondence about the sweeper many times. And I think it would be something that would be worthwhile for them to talk about. And it's a no-sweat type of discussion.
Yeah, I'm just – I get – okay, shouldn't say anything. It's so frustrating just to say I'm not going to support it without being able to say why, but I'm not going to.
I'll
George,
support it.
Okay, you got one? Okay, you got the support. So would you – funnel that to PWEB,
and that'll include the requirements for that process
for
the storm drain management.
Yeah,
Mayor, was the intent then for a recommendation or information to come back to the City Council in a memo form, or just here to PWEB?
I think I'd like to leave it open to PWEB to communicate to us through a memo, and I'll be attending that meeting. So if there's some real significant issues, I could obviously come back here.
George, you have anything?
Actually, I had a few more.
A few more.
Yeah. Well, one is there was the point that was brought up in public comment.
You mean another?
No, there's one more that it's like 50-50. I'm not sure if I'm going to jump on it or not. But the item that was brought up at public comment about Diablo Canyon's warm water mitigation funding, if that's something that we need to make sure that owners, we've talked about some things that we could do to in the commercial district to communicate to them more effectively, to try to bring those vacant properties into some sort of production. There are some options there. It sounds fairly complicated, but also worthwhile to pursue. So I'd like to see some preliminary dialogue with that. This is the one that I was 50-50 on. What do you think about that? Hold off. Okay, we'll do a little more legwork and come back.
Talk to the bankers.
Do you have anything, George? Are you finished?
Yeah, no, I am.
Nancy?
I have nothing.
Carla? I have nothing. Does staff have anything else?
I just have one point of clarification, if I could, back to Councilman Smuckler's issue with the Diablo Canyon. Would the council be comfortable that coming in memo form from the Harbor Department for information?
Certainly.
Okay, thank you.
Great, so it's not an agenda item. We'll just do it that way. Cool. Anything else? Okay, we're adjourned. Thank you so much.